This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The European Union is predicting today that 3 million more migrants could arrive on the continent within the next 14 months. And the Associated Press says the head of the UN peacekeeping mission in Central African Republic has asked the UN Sanctions Committee to lift its arms embargo. Coming up, music from Ghana, and in our feature segment, African countries recognize the critical role of the private sector in boosting economic growth. I'm Kim Lewis with Yehia Spuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Happy Thursday, Sunny.
Happy Thursday to you, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you have some kudos for Kenyan athletes in your latest blog post.
Kim, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to go to blogs.voanews.com/sunny. Once again, that address, blogs.voanews.com/sunny. And check out my latest blog post. It's titled, Great Year for Kipchoge and Kenyan Marathon Runners. I write how 2015 is proving to be another great year for Kenyan athletes at the marathon distance. The Kenyans swept the men's and women's titles at three major marathons, Berlin, Chicago, and New York. Leading the Kenyan charge was Eliud Kipchoge, who clocked 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 42 seconds to win the London Marathon April 26th. And then he ran 2 hours and 4 minutes even to win the Berlin Marathon 5 months later. Kipchoge is celebrating his 31st birthday on this Thursday. Eliud, if you're tuning in this evening, happy birthday, buddy. Eliud won silver and bronze medals for Kenya at 5,000 meters at the 2008 Beijing Olympics and the 2004 Athens Olympics. After winning the Berlin Marathon, Kipchoge told the energetic Andy Edwards he hopes to win another Olympic medal in 2016 in the marathon.
Now, after Berlin, I need to go and concentrate and prepare and plan for Rio. But before Rio, this Berlin, Rio is still some 11 months to go. I need to run one marathon before Rio. But exactly, I don't know which one, but I need to go for one marathon and then go to Rio.
Because your record now is so impressive. 6 marathons, 5 wins and a second place. I mean, perhaps some might say, well, why run another marathon? But is it that you want to, before the Olympics, but is it that you want to keep in that groove? I mean, is there a danger of sometimes overtraining and not having enough racing?
Okay, 11 months is too long, and you need to have a race, another marathon to tell the body that, and test the body out the reacts, and also to tell the body and the mind, another marathon is coming. You know, it's the main thing is the mind, not the body. If the mind, if you train for 11 months, true, the mind might get tired. So it's better for the body to get tired than the mind to get tired. So I hope for both the mind and the body, then I'd love to have one marathon before Olympics.
So it's interesting because you've talked before about how important the mind is. So that would be one of the big spring marathons, I presume, next year.
Hopefully, yes.
Is there another danger? I mean, you're a man who seems to have avoided the dangers, the pitfalls of training. You've got the training right for the marathon. But, you know, I can imagine a lot of people say, if I'm going to the Olympics, I've got to train extra hard, or I've got to do more, I've got to do something different to what I have been doing. I mean, would you anticipate doing anything that much different?
Not really. But, you know, I've been with my coach for the rest of my life in athletics, and I don't think I can add something, but I will continue with a normal program, and it will help me to come with a medal or with a gold medal in Rio. My program actually has been very good. It gives me good preparation, and that's the goal for each sportsman, that better preparation is better than if you prepare very well, then winning can come.
And you mentioned your coach, Patrick Sang. So he's been with you from the start. I mean, people have talked about seeing you in 2003 winning that 5,000 metres on the track at the World Championships and beating Kenenisa Bekele, Hicham El-Gurouj as well. Have you and Patrick plotted a long-term approach to your athletics career?
It's really a very long time. This is 12 years now. I have never been coached by anybody in my life in athletics. Yeah.
But when you came together, did you eventually say, or did you say to yourselves, well, one day it'll be the marathon, or was it a case of, well, let's get all we can out of your career on the track first?
My plan was to run very well for a ticket, which worked very well. After 2012, then we decided to move to the road and to the marathon. And the transition actually was good, and that's why I can say our plan and preparation actually are up to date.
How did you and Patrick Sang meet? Was it a chance meeting, or did somebody say, hey, you two should get together and one be the coach and one be the runner?
We come from the same village.
So it was as simple as that? You were almost neighbours?
We are neighbours.
I mean, 12, well, more than 12 years, well, so, let's say 12, 15 years ago. I mean, was it literally a case of you were in one house and he was in another in the same village?
It's maybe about 1 kilometre, 2 kilometres apart.
Well, I think the rest of the world's runners, or runners outside of Kenya, will just stand back and think, oh, that's quite a story. Well, it sounds like you and Patrick Sang, your coach, will be planning as carefully as you've done already for 12 years or so for, well, all being well, that Olympic marathon in Rio. Eliud Kipchoge, the winner in Berlin this year. Thanks very much. Thank you, Eliud.
Thank you, too. Thank you very much.
Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this, it's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Our friend in Lagos, the VOA's Nightline Africa sportsman, Segun Dot on the spot Adeyemi, read my blog post and said, Sonny, I'm not sitting on the fence this time. I'm tipping Kipchoge to win an Olympic gold next year in Brazil. In African club football, TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo will host USM Alger of Algeria Sunday in the decisive second leg of the CAF Champions League final. Mazembe is the favorite to lift the trophy after winning the first leg in Algeria, so says our African football guru, David Legg.
Mazembe went to Algeria, a place where it's very difficult and very rarely that an away team wins, and they defeated USM Alger by 2-1 in the first leg of the final. And having watched the first match, Sonny, on TV, I have to say Mazembe are my firm favourites to win the title for the fifth time. The first leg I found really disappointing. It was the first time I'd seen USM Algiers live this year, and I was expecting maybe too much of them, but they were clearly overawed. And in the end, it was only the great goalkeeping of Zema Mouch that restricted that final scoreline to 2-1. Mazembe missed a penalty, and it could have been 4 or even 5-1, such was the dominance of the visitors. Mazembe had a very adventurous attitude, almost from the kickoff. They went at the Algerians, and they took the lead with a beautiful half-volley looping shot from Rainford Kalaba, the Zambian winger. Now, Kalaba turned from hero to villain in first-half stoppage time when he pushed an Algerian in the face, and then the Algerian became an immediate nominee for an Oscar award. The way he fell to the ground, you would have got the impression, Sonny, that he'd been hit by a bulldozer. Now, I watched the replay of this incident many times. There's no doubt that Kalaba did put his hand into the face of the Algerian. But the way the Algerian fell, for artistic impression, Sonny, 10 out of 10, definitely. But on a serious note, it meant Mazembe down to 10 men and a straight red card from the referee. In the second half, Mazembe missed a penalty. Nathan Sincala, a pretty poor attempt from the Zambian, easily saved by Zamouche, who dived the right way. But then Mazembe got another penalty, and this time Samata, their leading scorer from Tanzania, he stepped up and put the ball calmly and cleanly into the net. So now it's 2-0. Segur came on as a substitute for USM, and with 2 minutes left, he scored a fine goal from the edge of the box. But to me, Sonny, it's just a stay of execution for the Algerians. I was really, really disappointed. I was expecting a lot more from a team that had lost only twice in 16 games en route to the final. When you consider that at the group stage, they won 5 games in a row, but I just didn't see the class, I didn't see the creativity that I expected from a Champions League finalist. And well done to Mazembe, a good away victory. In fact, their first victory in 6 visits to Algeria in different CAF club competitions. And the scenario now, Sonny, is that the Algerians have to score at least twice in Lubumbashi to have any hope of wresting that trophy for the first time. A 1-0 victory would not be enough because they would lose out on the away goal rule. Mazembe, on the other hand, a goalless draw will suit them fine. They then win 2-1 on aggregate. So you would have to say that the ball is very much in the Mazembe court.
Thanks, David. That's our African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis.
Thank you, Sonny, and listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 17:30 hours UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Coming up, a recent survey paints a sad picture for Kenya's ability to care for its growing, aging population. And next, African countries recognizing the critical role of the private sector in boosting economic growth. But first, some music. Here is Roki Duane of Ghana with the Master Plan.
Trouble. Hand in hand we carry each other. common people, lift up your heart. Now that you have seen the light, we must sing this song with one great voice.
Surviving the master plan. Surviving, surviving now.
Come on people, meditate, go higher. Ghana people, make you take it, go higher. Come Africa, make you light my fire. And I'll be proud. I could not believe the news today. Another hero falls in South Africa. Wipe your tears and fears away. All you children from Africa, Jamaica, sing new songs of joy and redemption. Flags in celebration. Come on people, lift up your heart. Now that you have seen the light, we must sing this song with one great voice.
Surviving the master plan. Surviving, surviving now. Surviving, surviving now.
Eat the fit to move up so then we two we go to our table higher. So then we two we go move up, take go higher.
Surviving the master plan.
If they fit to pass up, so then we two we go pass up, take go higher.
Surviving the master plan.
If they fit to move up, so then we two we go move up, take go higher.
Surviving the master plan.
Surviving.
Rocky Duani of Ghana with the master plan.
Well, the financial services firm Alexander Forbes says more than 40% of Kenyans cannot afford to retire and as such must continue working. The firm says another 40% rely on family for support. The survey paints a sad picture for Kenya's ability to care for its growing aging population. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
...65-year-old Dominic Ologi runs a tap water kiosk. He spent three decades working in the public and private sector. He stopped working 10 years ago, but he is one of millions of Kenyans who can't afford to retire.
During these times, I had a lot of time in my hands. And to supplement what my wife was bringing in, I looked at my environment, what my environment was lacking at that time.
Ologi, like many Kenyans, has no savings of his own for retirement. He gets 7,500 shillings, about $75, a month from his state pension. Alexander Forbes administers financial and retirement funds in the region. The South Africa-based firm says Kenya has the lowest mandated pension contributions on the continent, just 10% of income. The head of Kenya's Retirement Benefit Authority, Edward Odundo, says workers need to save more.
If you know if you retire, you should be able to get at least 40% of what you used to earn. But if you are getting less than 10%, it shows that you have a big deficit, just even in the basics.
National Social Security covers most of Kenyan workers, but the scheme is plagued by corruption and management issues. Officials say contributions are low and thus payouts are low. Workers are resisting efforts by the government to increase the monthly contribution to 12%, half from the employer and the other half from the employee. Alexander Forbes says nearly half of retired Kenyans depend on family members to survive. 22-year-old Wasonga Jacob says he doesn't have a problem supporting his parents.
It's just nurturing in us as human beings to support, also give back to where we came from. Because look at it from this angle. They have taken care of you from since you're young up to now, taking care of you up to school. And so literally it is also socially acceptable or socially moral to give back to mom and dad.
However, 27-year-old Faith Mutisia says it is a burden.
I get it's a bit hard because staying here in Nairobi is not cheap. When it comes also to rent and to know you are paying all that pension for me, I pay for three people, is not easy.
The World Health Organization says Kenyans are living longer than they did 20 years ago. That, combined with the ongoing population boom in Africa, means pressure on the state to provide for the elderly will likely only intensify. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Most African countries recognize the critical role of the private sector in boosting economic growth. Young entrepreneurs are among the key drivers in today's private sector. Dr. Miman Ndelekovic is the CEO of the Initiative for Global Development, an organization that harnesses the power of the private sector for inclusive growth and poverty alleviation in Africa. VOA's Leonard Mudu asked him about several reports showing that the private sector is driving economic growth in Africa.
We as African business have seen a lot of maturity in the last 10 to 15 years in the sector. If you look at the growth in the continent, you know, 6-7 of the top world's fastest growing economies, it's not only driven by natural resources, it's also being driven by the growth of the African born and bred businesses. And that really is what we as IGD really focus on.
So when you mentioned maturity, where were we 10 years ago, and what have we matured into today?
You know, what you had back in the 80s and 90s is an awful lot of trade and commerce in Africa. There was always the private sector, but it was transactional. This political stability was not there for people to be willing to reinvest, particularly the local companies. What we've seen last 15 years and increasing, it's a real fast ramp up, last 5 years, is that the African businesses born, started by African entrepreneurs, are reinvesting themselves back in country. You're seeing the African diaspora coming back, mm-hmm. and the young Africans that's coming back are not necessarily looking for the government jobs. They're looking to start businesses, enter companies, and grow them. That's where all the growth is. That's what's creating the jobs.
And we see a lot of young entrepreneurs today, innovations and new technologies are really part of the process here. What can you tell? Are we getting closer to a point where it will become a must for businesses to incorporate innovation into the company's culture, maybe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because as businesses, whether they're multinationals or African-born and expanded, are really looking at one market. There's one worldwide market. We have to be competitive. We have to stop this business of protecting markets. Mm-hmm. So the growth and the scalability of business all calls back to the requirement to be innovative, take the best possible approaches, you know, utilize the advantages in some sense of being the last to develop. The laggards, the advantage of the laggard is you learn from the other's mistakes. This is what leapfrogging technology is all about. Mm-hmm. We've learned from others. We come in, we're not born by the weight of past infrastructure. Why has Cellcom and the mobile telephone and telephone applications work so hard? We never had the landlines. Can the same thing happen in power, where we're going to source of use power production? Why not?
So what sectors would you say are really driving the private sector?
What's driving? Definitely infrastructure. Basically, if you look at where you have the problems, solution to the problems, is what's driving the sectors.
Okay.
So resolving power deficiencies, creating power opportunities, are the growth opportunities. Coming in on agriculture and agro-industry, it's not just the, you know, agriculture in Africa has to become a business. I mean, it's been stated by so many people, including the new president of African Development Bank. Agriculture is a business. This is where you're going to have the employment creation. We have to have the young people want to come back to agriculture because it's really agribusiness. Is value addition to the products. It's not just scratching dirt and creating products on a subsistence basis. It's adding value. And the big, big change is the size of the market. African market is doubling. We'll be reaching 2 billion. It's 50% urban. Those people are all consumers now. And that is what's driving it.
That was Dr. Mima Ndelekovic, CEO of the Initiative for Global Development. He was speaking to VOA's Leonard Moudou. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Once the fighting ends, peace treaties are signed and armies disbanded, too often the world assumes that life in former conflict areas will soon return to normal. But in many countries, landmines and unexploded munitions kill and maim their victims decades after the original conflict is little more than an ugly memory. Leftover landmines and unexploded munitions stand in the way of post-conflict stabilization and inhibit long-term development. They render thousands of acres of land unusable and destabilize communities. Clearly, people can only realize the benefits of a return to peace once these deadly hazards are removed. Since 1993, the United States has been part of a concentrated effort to clear and destroy poorly secured, unstable, or illegally traded conventional weapons of war. So far, we have invested $2.5 billion into this drive. In addition, every year the United States Department of State releases To Walk the Earth in Safety, a report which details the previous year's efforts to reduce the harmful effects of these remnants of war. This year's report notes that in 2014, four projects in particular stood out. First, we launched a five-year initiative to completely demine Vietnam's Quang Tri province and increased our funding for the clearance project tenfold. In the Middle East, we helped fund the Halo Trust's work in the West Bank, a first-of-its-kind effort to clear the mines there. In Tajikistan, we funded the first and only all-female demining team in Central Asia. And finally, we work to help destroy illicit and at-risk weapons and munition stockpiles in Chad, Niger, and Bosnia and Herzegovina. To Walk the Earth in Safety not only provides detailed information of our programs in these countries, it makes clear the real differences these programs make in the lives of countless people, said Rose Guatemala, Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security. With the help of our NGO partners, we have turned one-time battlegrounds into land for vital infrastructure. We have cleared minefields so that farmers can get back to their fields and children can walk to school safely in Angola and other countries. These inspirational programs touch thousands of lives all over the world, from children in Sri Lanka who can now safely walk to school, to farmers in Vietnam who can now tend to their crops without fear.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.